to Economics in Action, a podcast where we explore topics and ideas related to economics. In this episode, we ask the question, does the world free ride on the U.S. pharmaceutical industry? A recent opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal makes the claim that other countries that negotiate prices on medicine free ride on the drug innovations that the U.S. pharmaceutical industry makes. The provocative title of the piece, Be Thankful for High Drug Prices, has unsurprisingly caused backlash and criticism online. No one likes high drug prices, and there are significant ethical considerations to consider. Most people would probably agree that it's unfair or even morally wrong to make the elderly or low-income individuals pay exorbitant prices for the drugs that they desperately need. So why then should we be thankful, according to the authors? Well, the main argument boils down to the fact that a disproportionate amount of drug company revenues come from the U.S., because other countries get to pay less. They do this by negotiating drug prices or force drug companies to relinquish their patent protections. This then lays the burden of recouping large investments in new drug development on the shoulders of Americans. And if Americans didn't pay these high prices, pharma companies wouldn't have the incentive to innovate and create new drugs. Before we dive into the arguments, let's talk briefly about the unique nature of the pharmaceutical industry. The pharmaceutical industry has several distinctive characteristics that set it apart from other sectors in the economy. These features have large implications for how the industry operates, its market dynamics, and the broader impact on healthcare and society. The first unique aspect is the high cost structure. The cost of researching and developing a new pharmaceutical drug is exceptionally high, often running into billions of dollars when accounting for all the compounds that fail during various stages of development. Estimates of the average cost of new drug development vary, but most agree that the costs have been rising. The consulting firm Deloitte estimates it at about $2.3 billion on average, but a study by researchers in London in 2020 put the cost at around $1.3 billion. This high cost is due to the extensive, time-consuming clinical trials required to ensure a drug's safety and efficacy, as well as the regulatory approval process. Then there's the legal monopoly rights, known as a patent. To recoup the substantial R&D investments, pharmaceutical companies are granted patent protections that give them exclusive rights to sell a new drug for a limited period, typically 20 years from the filing date of the patent. This creates a temporary monopoly, allowing companies to set high prices without immediate competition from generic versions. However, the effective monopoly period is often shorter when accounting for the time taken to develop and approve the drug. There's also regulation. The pharmaceutical industry is among the most heavily regulated sectors globally. Regulatory bodies such as the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the European Medicines Agency impose stringent requirements for drug approval. These regulations ensure drug safety and efficacy, but also add to the development cost and time to market. And finally, demand. Demand for pharmaceuticals can be very inelastic, meaning that price increases don't reduce demand by a whole lot. That's because medications are often essential for health and survival. Patients and healthcare providers may have little choice but to purchase a drug regardless of price, especially in the absence of alternatives. This demand inelasticity allows pharmaceutical companies to set higher prices than might be possible in more elastic markets. And actually, there's one more characteristic of the pharmaceutical industry, and that is risk. The industry is driven by innovation, with a constant need for new drugs to address unmet medical needs and to replace revenues from products losing patent protection. However, pharmaceutical R&D is inherently risky, with a high likelihood of failure. The potential for significant financial loss or gain from a single product is a distinctive economic feature. Okay, so what about other countries free riding? Well, first we need to understand what it means to free ride in this context compared to the traditional notion of free riding in economics. Traditional free riding typically involves public goods, which are non-excludable and non-rivalrous. That means that it's hard to prevent access to these goods, and once the goods are made, they should be free, since everyone can use them without depleting them. Examples include national defense, public parks, and street lighting. Because these goods are available to everybody, regardless of individual contribution, some may choose not to pay for them. At the core of the traditional free rider problem is a collective action problem, where individuals' rational behavior, i.e., not contributing to cost while still benefiting, leads to suboptimal outcomes for the group, i.e., underprovision of the public good. Pharmaceuticals are not public goods, however. They are both excludable and rivalrous goods. Companies can exclude individuals from accessing a drug through patents and pricing, and consumption by one individual, purchasing a drug, can reduce the quantity available for others. The free riding in this context refers to countries leveraging regulatory mechanisms to negotiate lower drug prices, benefiting from the research and development primarily funded by higher prices in the markets like the US. Pharmaceutical companies aim to recover their R&D cost and maximize profits across global markets. The argument suggests that companies set higher prices in the US to compensate for lower prices elsewhere, rather than this being a case of non-contributors benefiting from a good that they did not pay for. However, the idea the authors put forward is that, like a public good where a collective action problem leads people to free ride and therefore underproduce said public good, so too will new drugs be underproduced. So what evidence do they have for this? Well, not a lot. They don't really present any information about how much new drug R&D the rest of the world produces. Nor do they cite any evidence showing that drug producers come out with less new medications when the government steps in to negotiate prices. So there are really two questions to ask here. The first one is, do other countries free ride on US medicine research? And the second is, would the US introducing drug negotiation lead to less drug innovation for everybody? A research paper entitled Foreign Free Riders and the High Price of US Medicines from 2005 by Light and Lexchin argued that the free rider problem is a myth dating back to the 90s. When drug companies started to craft this narrative, when seniors in the US started to argue for price controls like in other high-income countries. They present data showing that some European countries like the UK, Switzerland, and Sweden spend more of a percentage of their GDP on medicine R&D than the US. However, Canada, Germany, and France spend much less. Nevertheless, as a proportion of research and development spending, European companies contributed more than their proportional share of new molecular entities. That is just to say that these companies are just as innovative, if not more innovative, than the US in producing new medicine, given their level of R&D spending. Another paper entitled US Pharmaceutical Innovation in an International Context also backs this claim. But what I find most striking is the cost breakdown of large pharmaceuticals. Drug companies in the US spend 3 times more on marketing and sales and admin than they do on research. These areas of cost obviously contribute a significant amount to the higher prices of drugs. It also illustrates that there is plenty of room for companies to cut cost in the face of price negotiations without sacrificing R&D spending. After all, the incentive to research groundbreaking new drugs is essential for these firms to compete in the market, whereas areas like admin and marketing probably aren't. So the notion that foreign companies free ride on the US because of negotiated prices seems to lack evidence and in fact be untrue. But what about the other question? At the margin, shouldn't we expect some cuts to research and development and therefore new drug development if prices for US domestic drugs are negotiated down? Well, estimates have been made for that. According to the Congressional Budget Office research, of the 1,300 new drugs expected to hit the market in the next 30 years, 13 less drugs would be developed because of negotiated prices. That's not nothing, but it seems like it might be a decent trade-off to get people more access to drugs. Note that this estimate is just for negotiated Medicare drug pricing, as set out in the Inflation Reduction Act, and doesn't pertain to all drugs. Lastly, it's important to point out that drug research has different stages, and basic research done at universities and funded by the government plays a very large role, and this research won't change regardless of price negotiation. In conclusion, I think the evidence seems to point to the claim that other countries free ride on U.S. drug innovation as being overblown or even flat out wrong. U.S. drug makers do invest more in research and development spending, but also spend a lot more on marketing and sales. Not only that, drug companies that operate in countries with significantly lower drug costs due to negotiation are still highly profitable. Furthermore, I see negotiated drug pricing for certain diseases, such as those in the Inflation Reduction Act bill, as being decent trade-off. It's unlikely that a significant amount of drug innovation will be lost because of these lower prices. Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, please comment and subscribe.